Do you remember when you were a little kid and adults would ask you questions, and sometimes the questions are like, what'd you do at school today? Or what's your favorite color? What do you want for dinner? But a lot of the time adults asked us when we were kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? You start getting asked that question when you're really little, right? And the idea is to help a child kind of dream. But what usually happens to us is we set a plan in place for what we want to be when we grow up, and we chart out how to get there. And we hold in our minds like an idea of the perfect life and all the things we need to have for that life to be perfect, and we start to pursue that. And the reality hits in right around high school when the first couple things go wrong, or maybe it's middle school, and then kind of for the rest of our lives, more and more things happen to us that get in the way of the type of happiness we thought we were going to have and the type of life we used to dream about when we were little. Life just happens, and along the way, we get hurt a lot. Dreams are broken. Things don't end up exactly the way we imagined. And as that happens to us, we all go through the exact same thing. We ask ourselves, did I screw something up? Did I miss something? You know, did I take a wrong turn and get out of God's will for my life? And as we ask those questions, we also tend to start to wonder about God. Because as we experience heartbreak and loss and life not being what we thought it would be, we can look at God and say, well, what kind of God are you? Why would you have let this happen to me? My life isn't at all what I thought it would be. And so how could you be a good God? And it's very often in that place that we discover a very holy call to understand what Jesus is getting at throughout the Gospels, but in a particular way, in this parable about the rich man and about Lazarus. Because what Jesus is doing is challenging us to think differently about the way we assess success and happiness and even eternity. You see, we've got these two dramatic figures, you know. We've got the rich man who has everything in life. He has rich garments, which in the Bible are a strong symbol of blessing. He has obviously a large home with rich banquets. He has everything that seems to say his life is good. And then on the other side, we have Lazarus, this man who is so broken and so poor that he just sits at the doorstep of this rich man. And he would eat any scrap the rich man would give him because he's so hungry. He has so little. And Christ is really clear in using kind of a vivid and kind of one of the more gross images of the Gospels. He says his body was covered in sores, and dogs used to come and lick the sores, which tells us something about like the kind of life Lazarus is living there. He's so tired out. He's so exhausted by misfortune and by his life not being what it could be that he doesn't even have the energy anymore to fight off these dogs that come, and he just lets them lick his sores. This is a man whose life we would look at and say, that's a life fallen apart. There's nothing good there. And when we look at these two men, very often, actually, we can identify with Lazarus a little more than the rich man. I don't presume any of us here have mansions that are sprawling, filled with rich furniture and sumptuous banquets overflowing. All of us carry within our lives parts that were broken. We carry sores somewhat like Lazarus. And like Lazarus, sometimes we find ourselves just sitting down in the mess and saying, how did it end up here? This isn't at all the life I dreamed I would have. But Jesus takes us to the resolution of the story and tells us something about Lazarus that has to instruct our own hearts. Because in the end, Lazarus is the one who lived well. And in fact, the visible blessings of his life, or the lack thereof, don't tell us that much about what's happening within. Jesus is addressing this parable to the Pharisees, who think that visible blessings and having life the way that everybody thinks it should be, they think that means they are good. But in the end, Lazarus is the one who's good. Why? Because he doesn't turn away from God when the blessings don't seem to be there. Because he carries through the suffering without despairing. And because he's not attached to the things of this world in a way that makes him in the end unholy. See, this parable blows open our idea of what life is supposed to look like. All of us hold a hope to have life that goes really well. But Christ is saying life isn't going to go perfectly. And when it breaks a little bit or even a lot, what will you do? As we imagine the Lord looking at Lazarus, the type of man who finds his way into everlasting bliss, we can't help but notice that nothing is lost on God. God sees Lazarus's suffering. God notices his pain. God understands that his earthly life is not probably what he wanted it to be, but that doesn't mean God is not there. Indeed, God is there, watching and waiting and even assisting Lazarus to stay faithful. What about us? What are the sores of our lives? What are the places where we don't have as much as the rich man? We weren't invited to his banquet, and we can't afford to celebrate the way that he can. What are the things visible and invisible in our lives where it's just not what we thought it would be? What God is saying to us is he knows about all of that. It's not lost on him. He hasn't missed it. And in fact, there's a great invitation to realize that the way we tend to assess or evaluate success is often wrong. Having a life on earth that goes perfectly is not the whole story. Having everything go just the way we wanted when we were little kids typically isn't exactly what God actually wants. And often, God is going to invite us to suffering because he sees how that fits into the big picture. The way that he saw how it fit into the picture of Jesus Christ in the flesh, his life well lived. Too often we look at our lives as this 90-year or 100-year window and say, I've got to get everything right and have it just the way I want before I die. And it's not happening, and so we say we're failing or God is failing us. But over and over again, Christ is proclaiming to us a kingdom that is not of this earth and pointing us onto something beyond this earth and helping to remind us that sometimes we weigh the joys and blessings of earthly living with too much weight. If we could really conceive of eternity, an unending span of time in which there is no suffering, and as the scripture tells us, in which every tear is wiped away, if we could conceive of that, we would desire that with all our hearts. And then this 90 or 100 year period would become very small. It would be like a fingernail against the whole of eternity. And we'd be able to let go a little bit of that frustration and discouragement that life isn't exactly how we wanted it to be. And with that desire for the eternity that we're called to, we would find within ourselves an ability to carry our crosses, because we'd learn that this life is not the whole story. We're not made to stay here forever. Nothing is lost on God, and he sees our sores and wants to carry us through the pain into something far greater than our little kid dreams could ever have guessed. Isn't that exactly why the Eucharist is such a consolation for us? Because as we come to the Lord every Sunday, and we acknowledge at the very beginning our sinfulness, and we carry the pain and the brokenness that is just a part of every human life, Christ says, I come to you there. The antiphon before the gospel references that Christ left the riches of heaven to take up our poverty so that he could be with us in the places where it's just not going that well, where our hearts are broken and our bodies are covered in sores, literal, metaphorical, whatever. The beauty and the gift of the way that God relates to us is that he doesn't just stand on far, on high, looking down. He chooses to come down. And not just to be near us, but to come into our bodies and into our lives in the Eucharist to say, you are not alone there. And I am in fact at work, even in your suffering, to bring you to something far greater than you will ever conceive in the flesh. And like Lazarus, if we stay faithful to him, despite our trials, we will enter into that ultimate goodness that far surpasses the riches of a nice banquet, of a huge home, and of every material thing on earth, none of which can actually truly satisfy. Just invite you as we move into the Eucharist here to take a moment of prayer and to ask the Lord to help you name the sores, the places where relationships and hearts have been broken, where dreams haven't been achieved, where life just isn't what you thought it would be. I invite you to let the Lord show you that he knows all of that and that his desire is to come right into those places and be with you there and lift your gaze to consider eternity. Just invite you in this moment to be very honest with God. Maybe close your eyes for a moment here. Be honest with God about what's not great and what's not perfect, about where there's pain and suffering. And just acknowledge now that the Lord sees all of that and that he brought you here this day, on this moment, for this, so that he could take up flesh again in the form of bread and wine consecrated, and that he could come to you hidden and humble, and you could receive him into your body and into your soul. And as he comes to you, he comes all the way into those places where life just isn't perfect. He says, stay with me. Don't turn away. Don't run. Stay with me. I'm with you there. Because in those places where it seems dark, or we think God has given up, and we have no idea where to go, Jesus speaks the truth. He says, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. And I have come to you, not that you would suffer, but that you may have life and have it to the full. This is exactly why he's gathered us today. This is exactly what he brings us in the Eucharist. And we beg for the grace to believe more fully and to accept him more perfectly this day, so that our yes, our amen, would resound unto eternity, that our pain would be turned into dancing, and that the gift of life everlasting and the desire for it would burn within our hearts as we follow him who offers us everlasting goodness.